From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oh, Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
Pinole, California.
San Jose.
I'm from Paradise, California, up north.
Coming up, we'll see whether tech companies really are giving back to their new mid-market neighborhoods.
If you want to say we've turned around the Tenderloin, if you've turned it around by moving out all the people and supplanting them with an entire new group, then you haven't fixed anything other than a zip code.
Then an update on San Francisco's relationship with Airbnb. Plus, we tell you the story behind this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound. Nothing but strikes tonight on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Last month, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee and Supervisor Jane Kim met on the third floor of St. Anthony's homeless shelter in the Tenderloin neighborhood. They stood in front of news cameras and helped local tech company Zendesk announce a new mobile app designed to digitally connect the city's homeless to food, shelter, and other services.
I'm proud of this a relationship that we have that, in addition to creating jobs and helping us physically transform mid-market, we're also taking on values that say those that are additionally challenged, we've got help for you.
It's partnerships like these that Lee and the Board of Supervisors were hoping would develop when they voted in 2011 to give a big payroll tax break to companies like Twitter, Spotify, and a dozen others that moved into the mid-market and Tenderloin area.
And then hopefully that transforms into improvements in their lives, a more compassionate city that is smart about its businesses and its business relationships that go right to the heart of people that need those services.
But that transformation hasn't been felt across the board. KALW's Angela Johnston took a tour of the mid-market area to see what impact tech companies have had there.
This is Turk and Taylor, the most infamous corner in the city of San Francisco.
Del Seymour makes sure to include this corner on all of his Tenderloin walking tours. I'm with a group following him in and out of buildings. He's telling stories the whole way.
I still came in and I got trapped in the Tenderloin. Actually, I trapped myself. And I did years of living out there on the street. I lived in a cardboard box for a couple years.
The dozen people Seymour's talking to today are all tech workers. Their companies have moved into the Tenderloin in the last 3 years, and Seymour's telling them about the importance of being good neighbors.
As you know, Twitter's right down the street. You guys, Zendesk are right down the street, so.
You know, like the neighborhood can be slightly intimidating to someone who's not from here and walking around to get lunch in different places.
Chelsea Ashton moved to San Francisco in February. She took a job at Zendesk and admits she hasn't really explored the part of town where she works until now.
Like, I'm on it personally just to kind of, you know, get a better feel of the neighborhood, because sometimes, like, fear comes from ignorance.
Zendesk was one of the first to jump on the mid-market tax break and moved into an old furniture and carpet store at 6th and Market in 2011. Now the company suggests all of its new hires follow Seymour around for a day within the first few months of getting a paycheck.
If you walk along here, even in front of your place, you'll see the stubs where the benches were. So it was a lovely boulevard.
This area used to be a thriving commercial district in the mid-1900s. It became a place, though, that tourists avoided for decades.
So the theater space became porno houses and peep shows, strip clubs, the worst area that you could think of. So now it's trying to come back.
Now it's somewhere in between. Zendesk's hip new building is surrounded by a discount clothing shop on one side and two boarded up buildings on the other.
The building right here at the Warfield building is Spotify. That's a new tenant.
The tax break that helped draw so many companies to mid-market has saved them a lot of money. Twitter, for example, will save an estimated $22 million over 6 years. In exchange, the six biggest companies had to sign community benefit agreements, or CBAs. Those are contracts with the city that show how they'll contribute to their new neighborhood.
You hear about tech culture all the time and what that means, and usually it's happy hours and go-kart racing and bouncy ball houses, and with us it's community service.
Tiffany Apchinsky is Zendesk's Director of Social Responsibility and Public Affairs. Her job was created specifically to make and manage the company's CBA.
The biggest thing we wanted to do right away was not be in an ivory tower. We didn't want to move into the neighborhood and then lock our doors and stay in here and never go out.
Apchinsky records the hundreds of hours Zendesk employees spend volunteering in the neighborhood, the money they spend in local restaurants. At a community meeting last month where their CBA was literally applauded, she noted those and a new app the company is building to help homelessness.
Their CBA mentioned a lot of specific targets, specific goals.
Peter Masiak is the chair of the Citizens Advisory Committee, or CAC, for the mid-market area.
And really just a thorough and a document that they produce and just an ongoing commitment.
The advisory committee is made up of nonprofit workers, business owners, and neighborhood residents, all appointed by the city. They apply pressure on companies to make sure they truly accomplish the goals in their CBAs.
It's basically just trying to get these tech companies, any companies that move into the mid-market area, to be good neighbors and to actively engage with the community.
Take Twitter, for example. Its CBA includes everything from giving thousands of dollars worth of free tweets to giving free legal assistance to nonprofits. Soon after moving into its new building at 9th and Market in 2012, Twitter's editorial director Karen Wickrey told KALW she wanted to ramp up what they were giving back.
We intend to do more, we want to do more, and we will be doing more. I don't know what form it all takes. And I don't know that it's one kind of thing or another. It might be a mix of things that we do over time.
By the end of 2013, Twitter had done some things. It donated $75,000 to nonprofits. It installed Wi-Fi at a school. And hundreds of employees volunteered at local organizations. The company also went public, and it's now worth about $25 billion. That kind of value makes Citizens Advisory Chair Peter Masiak want to reconsider the company's original community benefits agreement.
So for Twitter's news last year, they said Twitter will work with community nonprofits and the San Francisco Unified School District to obtain the clearance needed to allow employees to volunteer at schools. It didn't actually say, though, that any employees would volunteer at schools.
Last month, Masiak and the committee decided Twitter didn't do enough. They felt the same way about Yammer, Spotify, Zoosk, and One Kings Lane. Masiak says some just didn't get their paperwork together.
A lot of the other ones had really unclear, vague goals that were really difficult to measure.
But Masiak says the Citizens Advisory Committee's opinion didn't ultimately matter to the city.
It was a symbolic vote. The city still has the ability and did go ahead and approve them all, but Zendesk was the only one that we supported.
The hard part about these CACs is that they are purely advisory.
Supervisor Jane Kim represents the mid-market and Tenderloin areas.
We set it up so that the community would have a medium to have a voice in the process, but we were not actually able to grant them any more authority than that. The city administrator is the ultimate decider.
Kim says they're still working to sort out the rules governing the tax breaks.
I think what's tough is that there's the in-between area where there's disagreement about whether their commitment is strong enough. Our office is committed to supporting a stronger process. We acknowledge that the process hasn't been good the last 2 years.
Twitter has added some specific goals in its agreement for 2014. $10,000 for homeless services, a $30,000 tech scholarship. But Citizens Advisory Chair Peter Masiak says the vague goals that actually involve interacting with the neighborhood haven't really been clarified.
Let's see, did they actually change that? Let me look at this year's. Yeah, it still just says we'll work with community nonprofits to obtain the clearance needed to allow employees. So when a goal is as vague or as low level as encouraging or obtaining clearance to then allow people to, it really makes it difficult to accurately evaluate success.
I reached out to Twitter and the other companies who submitted CBAs for an interview, but they did not make themselves available before our air date. In fact, the official job of managing Twitter's community benefit agreement remained unfilled from December to March. The bits and pieces that make up the CBAs aren't the biggest concerns, though, for many longtime residents of the city's new tech corridor. They're more worried about displacement.
In this building here, they're able to have a social worker on duty, mental health worker on duty. They bring in food 3 or 4 times a week.
Back on the tour, Del Seymour points out a lot of specialized housing units and notable nonprofits to the tech workers. He tells them that many residential hotels in the Tenderloin are actually protected by rent control. But surprisingly, there isn't any rent control for nonprofits.
You're right next door to St. Anthony. You've got Glide here. You got the Needle Exchange, the Welfare Department.
The most visible and successful nonprofits, like St. Anthony's and Glide Memorial Church, are getting dollars and volunteers from tech companies. But others are struggling, like a mental health clinic on Golden Gate Avenue, a few blocks away from Twitter and Zendesk.
So this is the waiting room. And I believe in a large waiting room because it gets filled up pretty fast sometimes.
Cindy Ghiori is the director of the Tenderloin Outpatient Clinic. It's provided mental health services to about 1,200 people in the neighborhood annually for the past 40 years.
So we'll go down the hall and I'll show you the rooms.
Next year, the clinic's rent is going up, and Ghiori says they can't afford it. Even in the Tenderloin, it's hard to find affordable space.
We discovered that a lot of landlords don't want to rent to a nonprofit, or that the cost per square foot is prohibitive. They think that they're going to get some tech industry in there and charge higher rents.
But, she says, for the sake of the people who live in the neighborhood, the clinic needs to stay.
Imagine the Tenderloin with no mental health services. Because that's a risk. You have the clients, they're not going anywhere because you have all those SROs.
Single room occupancy hotels, where low income residents live and rely on the neighborhood's food, shelter, and services.
We're in jeopardy of not being able to find those services because we have no place to go. We'll be as homeless as many of our clients.
I asked Ghiori if they've received any attention from the tech companies who've moved in down the street.
Not yet. Not that I've seen in a very material way. I hear a lot about plans, but nothing is coming to roost for our benefit yet.
Ghiori thinks that this is because it isn't as attractive to support people suffering from mental health or substance abuse.
You see an article in the paper paying lip service to it, but it's more difficult for us to make the public aware and want to support those services than it is if we had cute, cuddly people, kids and art programs or music or whatever. And so I think the word really, really, really has to get out.
The final stop on Del Seymour's tour is the Cadillac Hotel on Eddy Street. It was the first SRO west of the Mississippi, and it's a 5-minute walk from Zendesk.
This is a very famous hotel. It was a very luxury hotel back in the day. So when the whites stayed in the Fairmont, the St. Francis and the Palace, the blacks stayed here. Miles Davis stayed here. Cassius Clay stayed here. This used to be a boxing ring.
Seymour sits the dozen tech workers down in the lobby.
Yeah. How difficult is it even with...
One asks what would best help the people they've seen on their tour.
We don't want to sell dope on that corner, but we can't go on Twitter. Our kids can be taught how to code, just like you learn how to code. People ask me, what can I do for the people? Teach us how to code. Okay, because the only difference between you and that girl on that corner, you can code.
Right now, only CBAs for Zoosk and Zendesk make it clear they offer direct coding opportunities for youth in the area. Seymour explains real changes like that, like teaching kids to code or actually establishing affordable nonprofit space, aren't going to be easy. And they're going to take more of an investment than is currently being required by the city. But if done right, the CBAs will be more than just paper documents. And they'll actually allow companies to embrace their new neighbors and the community to embrace them back. In San Francisco, for Cross Currents, I'm Angela Johnston.
The Mid-Market Citizens Advisory Committee is having a meeting in just a few minutes at 5:45 in room 406 at San Francisco City Hall. If you can't make it there, give us a call and tell us what you think about revitalization in mid-market. Our number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Last week, we reported on the impact of tourist rentals on San Francisco's housing market. The rapid and massive growth of online brokers like Airbnb has transformed the way landlords and even renters use their spaces. Airbnb is valued at $10 billion. More than 7,500 units are available for short-term rentals in the city, and more of these are exclusively being used for tourists. That means these apartments are taken off the rental market. We spoke with Ted Gullickson, head of the San Francisco Tenants Union, who noted that
it's illegal, but they're getting away with it because nobody's enforcing the laws regulating the tourist conversions.
This week, things have changed. Airbnb announced Monday that it would start paying the transient occupancy tax, or the hotel tax, in two cities, Portland and San Francisco. That means in these cities, Airbnb will add a 14% surcharge to guests' bills. That fee used to be up to the landlords to pay, but enough were not paying that it's been estimated San Francisco was losing $2 million a year in tax revenue. Airbnb didn't respond to KLW's request for an interview, but a blog post on the company's website stated that while the company does not believe its hosts are the same as hotels, it wants to comply with city rules. San Francisco Board of Supervisors President David Chu is working on legislation to further regulate the tourist rental industry. His office told us they were happy that Airbnb has agreed the tax rate applies, but he wants to limit the practice's impact on the housing market by only allowing people to rent out the space they live in. He expects to announce his bill next month. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now it's time for Audiograph. All week long on KLW, we've been playing you this sound. Oh! Oh, yes! We asked you to tell us what it was and where you think we recorded it. KLW's Chris Hoff brings us the answer.
I don't know why they call it Seabowl. I've bowled since I was 5 years old, and we used to come down here. It was always called Seabowl, so that was the name. I don't know why they call it. Maybe because it's right by the water. You know, it has a great ocean view. I don't know. Oh! My name's Mark Gandulia, and I'm general manager, Seabowl. I've been here 18 years. I used to be a professional bowler. In my 20s, I was a professional bowler.
What did you average when you were a professional bowler?
Well, I was bowling a lot, bowling professionally. I was probably right around 230, 230 average. Well, we have 32 lanes. Seabowl has 32 lanes. Tonight's a league night.
32 lanes seems like a lot of lanes. Is that typical?
Nowadays, it probably seems a lot because most of the large bowling centers have closed, but... You know, 10 years ago, this was probably considered a medium to small size center, where now we're probably a medium to large size center in the Bay Area. This side right here that we're standing in front of is the fun side. Most of the adults are drinking, and they're here just to have a good time. If we walk a little farther down, we're going to start getting over to where they're a little more serious. So it's going to get a little quieter. They're bowling actually for cash every week.
Does any of these bowlers have a nickname?
No, they don't use nicknames. They use their real names. No, they don't have nicknames. It's not like the Big Lebowski or anything like that. No, it doesn't work like that.
It would be awesome if we could go back.
We want to go out there right now? We can.
So here we are. So what do you call this room?
This is just, they call it the pit area. It's all the machines, all the wires. Well, as you can see, when you throw the ball, the mechanism will come down, pick the pins up. And once you knock down, get shake. There's a shaker board on the bottom that shakes them back to the back.
And then there's a wheel that will shoot them back up to the top. And there's a little conveyor belt that will shoot them back up to the front where they get placed into the little cups that will set them back down again.
That is a crazy contraption. I really like it, though.
Well, bowling, when it first started, there was actually people that would sit back here and actually set the pins by hand.
What were they called?
They were pin boys. They call them pin boys, pin girls, pin boys. And they would just sit back here, and before they had the machines, and they would actually just set the pins, and then when the bowlers were done bowling, they'd throw them a quarter or something down the lane.
Vi Findlay from Pacifica.
And how long, and like what are you doing here tonight?
Oh, we bowl in a league every Tuesday. I've been bowling here since 1968.
1968?
Yeah. When we started bowling, it was the bowl boys that were behind there. So you can imagine, you've been back there, how hot that was. And all you could see, the poor kids' legs picking up all the pins and putting them back. It took forever, but that's what they did, you know.
That seems really dangerous, too.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, no, you couldn't bowl until all the pins are set up. But I just
still
figured back there would be hot and dusty and, yeah, you know. But anyway, that was it. But it's a great place to bowl. If you ever want to come bowling, this is the place to come.
A lot of you got this one right. Our winner this week is John Cooper. Congratulations, John. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, we'll have a new sound next week. Here's a peek.
We're going to walk up the hill. The horses are probably over the top.
So if you think you know what that was and where we recorded it, give us a call. Our number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. That's also where you can suggest where we should record next. And that's it for Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Maya DePaula Hanica, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Linda Jew, Christina Loring, Seth Samuel, Julia Scott, Stephen Short, Charlotte Silver, and Todd Whitney. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. This is Mark and the Casuals. How casual? So casual, they recorded this song at San Francisco Airport, SFO. Mark and the Casuals head up an evening of deep soul and dance music on Saturday night at the Chapel on Valencia Street in San Francisco. Show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Oh, oh, oh.